This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3874, for Thursday, the 8th of June, 2023. Today's show is entitled 2022-2023 New Year's Show Episode 9. It is part of the series HPR New Year Show. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 123 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is 2022-2023 New Year's Show, where people come together and chat.
Yeah, I had a Pentium 1 machine that I built to run DOS on. I initially built it up to be a MS-DOS sort of server, because with FreeDOS you can do some basic Ethernet networking. Now, because of energy concerns, I'm going to be setting that machine aside, and eventually I will probably replace that with emulation under Linux or on a Raspberry Pi or something.
Yeah, back then, I mean, a lot of stuff was like, I remember working on like token ring networks, and a lot of the stuff was like just coax networking.
Yeah, and some of it was regular coax, and some of it was a big fat coax that was a real bear to connect to. I mean, some of it was BNC connectors, which was maybe slightly harder to use than your cable TV cable.
And right.
Then they had one that was, it was almost like a garden hose. And then they had tap units that would pierce through the shielding and pick up signals from the signal conductor in the middle of the cable, and it would be connected to your computer through a, there was a vampire bit that punched through your cable, and then there would be a ribbon cable that would go back to your interface card.
Right, and all the network cards wanted to be Novell compatible, and now Novell's no longer around.
Well, what's interesting is that they're resurrecting a lot of the old network. There are networks which are designed either for hardware or emulated access for things like IBM's BitNet, which if you were doing token ring stuff, you probably were aware of.
Right.
And there's a DECnet out there on the internet as well.
Right.
But now the original networking protocols, both for Digital Equipment Corporation and for the original OSI model, had very, very few networks in them. So actually getting a large population of computers to talk to each other was a good trick with a lot of magic hand waving going on in the background.
Yeah. I remember 3Com was a big name way back in the day.
Yeah, 3Com was like Realtek or what have you. Or damn, I can picture it, but my brain is fading. Like TP-Link is today, you know.
Right, yeah.
Super nuts. Now, a lot of it was more, think of TP-Link selling stuff at Cisco prices.
Exactly.
Also, one of the most interesting things is that IBM's internal network was not built by the IBM suits. It was built by systems people so that they could get software updates and email and documentation and stuff between IBM systems, IBM systems. And it was all pretty bootleg because the primary IBM had what they called VM, which was it had two features. Each VM user would have an environment, including what they called a mini disk, which was what we would call a partition. And he would have something that behaved much like a single-user computer that his terminal talked to, and it transmitted data, and it stored data, and it did everything like that. And it ran applications, submitted jobs, whatever. And as far as the user was concerned, it was his little slice of heaven.
Right, right.
Also, it originally started out as a something that could be run on the first virtual memory IBM 360 machines, the IBM 360 67. But eventually, when it went to 370 modes, this environment was translated so that it couldn't run on a bare 360 or 370. It had to be run under a bare metal hypervisor that they called VM. And one of the things about VM, which IBM hated, because it wasn't a batch operating system, it wasn't their monster, and thus monster moneymaker, that would do punch cards and mag tape and a lot of stuff like that. This one was very interactive because of its eventually multiple user sessions that behaved like everybody got their computer, got their own slice of the computer, instead of having a bunch of cards punched and then having to hand them off to somebody to eventually load in the mainframe, and then you have to wait for your answers or your problem.
Right.
Bugs or what have you. But because IBM really was pushing this batch operating system, which started out as a multitasking operating system with first a fixed number of tasks, variable number of tasks, and it was a monster, just like the original 360 operating systems, OS 360, which was cobbled together and just over time developed more craft and more craft and more craft. And in fact, one of the uses of this VM system that the IBM brass were used to having all their machines, like the prior to 360 generation, everything would be on punch cards, paper tape, or if you were a good boy, it may be actually on Mylar mag tape. Disk was not a big deal early on in the development of things. But as Fred Brooks, God rest his soul, said, IBM started falling behind, and then they started throwing more programmers at OS 360 and these MVS stuff. And the MVS, which was their flagship, had so many memory leaks in it that they would run that on VM, because VM could fake a large address space. And their favorite operating system running under VM ran more efficiently than as if VM, MVS or whatever it was running on the bare metal. And this operating system was interactive, and it was much loved by computer science departments and stuff like that. But the IBM suits hated it because it meant users could sit down on their terminals and do typical, you know, go through databases or whatnot without having to wait for a stack of printouts 6 inches high or a stack of cards or what have you.
But yeah, those were the crazy days when everything was printed on like on wide carriage green bar paper.
Right. But the interesting thing is that they're powerful, all-singing, all-dancing operating system, which sucked at interactive functions, could not be used as the routing nodes for their own internal network. VM, which was much lighter weight, could be used as a routing node, and every so often, a new class of IBM brass would come in and say, we got to get rid of this VM stuff in our own networks. We have to move everything to MVS or whatever their big bloated operating system. And they would launch a project, and they would find out that their MVS, very inefficient for this application, couldn't do what what the rather streamlined VM system could do, and the project would be quietly held until the next crop of I'm going to fix everything management came.
Oh, wow.
It was insane. Also, this internal IBM network, which they called Because It's There or Because It's Time Network, BitNet, was larger than the internet until relatively late in its life. And also, in the 90s, a lot of official regulations required using the heavily theoretical OSI protocol, X25 and X29 and a whole bunch of other things, which didn't have a large address space and weren't very efficient and assumed that you would get your network from the phone company for your nation, and a whole bunch of other things were quite crippling. A lot of the people who knew what they were doing would want to use the American TCP/IP stack, but their bureaucratic structure wouldn't allow them to do that. So what they would end up doing is they would use TCP/IP, but they would bury it in whatever protocols was the official government protocol.
Okay, all right.
This wasn't very efficient, and because of the billing structure, which made your cell phone data plan look generous, it was quite inefficient. But when the government says you're going to run your data through only this type of pipe, you run your data through that type of pipe, and you encapsulate the protocols you actually want.
Right, right.
Because the OSI did not like using American standards coming out of America, because they were coming from our military and they didn't want to surrender their power to it. Also, the OSI, which did do some interesting stuff, that made certain that telephones could talk to each other and, you know, stuff like that, and you could plug in stuff at different places, you know, cables were standardized and whatnot. But they were heavily bureaucratic organization, and a lot of conferences and whatnot were held about this theoretical networking, how to get the 7-layer OSI model implemented. And a lot of people would fly to a lot of interesting destinations at interesting times of the year on the government dime or your company's dime or whatever, you know, somebody would be paying for it. And they would have this year's crop of theoretical implementations and explanations of the OSI protocol. The one thing that they wouldn't have would be actually anybody really implementing the protocol. They were always in permanent beta test. Now, the TCP/IP and whatnot were far more efficient because somebody had actually written the standards, passed them around, had them criticized, and then
made RFCs,
had to talk to each other. So they actually worked. But because of the politics, you had the politicians and OSI using a lot of money and a lot of paper, while the people in America were, and using American standards, were actually building the internet as we know it. I don't know if you're finding this interesting or not. Maybe I put you to sleep.
Oh, no, definitely, definitely.
Well, I have got this out of a book because the people in Geneva needed somebody to translate their hacked together documentation into a form that they could actually have printed, PDF form. So they hired a guy who went through with a bunch of Perl and whatnot and actually was able to produce documents that somebody could actually use. And he was also supposed to have a report on the state of international networking at the time. And this guy, coming from America, where he'd written a bunch of networking books, especially on things like digital equipment, DECnet and whatnot, maybe Novell stuff, and he knew what he was doing. But he, with the help of Sun Microsystems, they put up a server out in Colorado with all this stuff on it and had an FTP server on it so that anyone in the world could download these international standards, which in paper form were an arm and a leg up to the knee, because they were a slush fund for the OSI brass. And the OSI people, yes, if you want our standards, you buy our books, all, you know, 5 tons of them or whatever they were. And they were printed in large quantities and sold in small quantities because of the incredible markup. And the bureaucrats said, well, if we don't price them like this, we're not going to get the money to do other international projects. Of course, the other international project would be funded through UN grants or what have you. They wouldn't be funded by books that tended to end up in the OSI cellars being replaced by a new stack of books printed this year. Sort of like the phone book thing, but gilded, and some very cozy arrangements were made between the printers and the government bureaucrat. But the writer of this book actually went around the world a couple of times and interviewed various people who were putting the national and international networks together. This was like 1991. And at the time, the connections were rare enough that people could actually tell how, let's say, Japan was hooked through Hawaii or hooked through cables headed elsewhere. And because of the usage restrictions at the time, because a lot of this was government funded or research only or what, military only, whatever you wanted, a lot of these connections were, this traffic could go through this route and this traffic could go through that route. And there were people who were doing, like out in Hawaii, they did the first thing, kind of networking that looked like Wi-Fi, but was done to broadcast networking signals all over the Hawaiian Islands. And there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. And the European Union was trying to get its networks wired together. And countries like the Eastern Bloc would connect to the global network through basically phone patches. All sorts of crazy stuff going on.
You know, one thing that I've always found interesting is, you know, I guess I don't follow this stuff, like some of this stuff, very closely. But say, for instance, like GPS was like basically a military thing for a long time. But then all of a sudden it gets like opened up for civilian use, you know, just like, well, like DARPA, was like, you know, basically the beginnings of the internet. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was opened up for civilian use. But, you know, I like to know, you know, exactly, you know, how that process, you know, actually goes, because, you know, it's like first something is like used by the military is sort of like secret. And then all of a sudden they're like, anybody could use it. I think that's really interesting.
Well, part of what was happening was DARPA was having all the universities, or a lot of universities and contractors, would go to DARPA with their projects, and they would be asking for a big computer. And the universities or researchers would want their own big chunk of computing power. And yeah, there were military uses for it, but in the early days, while it was still ARPA project, where the D was pretty silent, they were debugging this thing. And yes, because a lot of the initial funding was to unify the defense/research. Basically, the networking was to give a backbone to the military-industrial complex. Yes, there would be a command and control element, but early days, a lot of the network's traffic was to connect research institutions and to try to harness together everything that was being done scattered across the country. It was only later in its life did the ARPANET actually get into military use, because they first had to figure out how to make it work and how to hook computers to each other and how to route stuff and all of that. But a lot of the military, the so-called military uses for the ARPANET early on, because it was a very limited network, it was made up of 56 K baud synchronous lines in the early days. If 56 K baud sounds familiar, it's what your fast dial-up modems were selling.
Right, right.
As their good speed, they never really achieved it, but on a synchronous line where nobody else is doing anything, and where it's cut, where it's not just residential quality phone lines, or hopefully it's better than residential quality because it's, you know, commercial grade, they could actually do shit. But the deal is that they were telling the truth that putting together a network of packet switching where if a link goes down, your network routes around it automatically and all of that good stuff was great stuff for the potential nuclear war. But a lot of it early on was, how do we connect it? How do we connect this machine to that machine? And the interesting thing is, let me kill that noise.
See, now you're making me want to look up some of these like old RFCs for like Telnet and FTP.
Yeah, well, the whole thing with the original RFCs were people working on the project and whatnot were handing around, and in the early days, since there wasn't really a network, it was a lot of mailing paper back and forth. But the way the original network was made up, and a small firm called Bolt, Beck & Newman in Cambridge got the deal, the computers, the big computers which the network was made to serve, were not hooked up to the network. They were hooked up to mini computers, which behaved as basically as routers, and those machines talked among themselves over the primitive networking protocols. This is a long time before TCP/IP, but they talked a standard language between each other, and every computer, all you had to do for your, whether it was, you know, an IBM or a digital machine or Sperry or whoever, is you had an interface that talked to these mini computers, and you sent data into the mini computer and you said, all right, I want it to go to node whatever. And the IMP network would handle all of the packet handling. And they did all this networking stuff, was done so that they would come out with a standardized design for an interface card for each machine and interface software and whatnot. And the basic data handling and whatnot was handled by interfaces to these, to the mini computers. And the minis talked among themselves and could do things like reload each other from paper tape, or they could send diagnostic information. A lot of the early network's traffic was the network talking to itself, telling everybody who's alive, who's dead, and who's sick.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because I've used like punch cards before and seen punch cards before, but I've never used or seen actual paper tape.
Well, I have started out using paper tape. What they had at my high school was a couple of teletypes, and these were mechanical keyboards, printers with a punch for an inch wide tape, which I believe it had 8 dots across because it was an 8-bit code. Now, on the teletypes that we used, they only used like, you had 6 dots, and one channel was used for parity, so you could try to see if the signal, if the character that you were transmitting had gotten corrupted along the way.
Right, right.
But the actual machine were uppercase only, at least in your basic teletype model 33. Later on, they had the teletype model 37, which used 7 bits out of the 8 possible, so you had upper and lower case. But on the initial machines, they were all lowercase. All uppercase, pardon me. Now in Unix, a lot of the cryptic things, why CP in Unix is so short and LS and all of the other alphabet soup, is that on a teletype, it didn't have an ordinary electric typewriter type keyboard. It had a very mechanical, very heavy key press keyboard. And using those horrendous keyboards, you didn't want to type any more than you had to.
So you kept everything short.
Kept everything to a minimum, as well as on the early PDP-11s, you may have only had 32 megs or kilobytes. You may have had only so many kilobytes of core. But in my high school, we had a Wang, I think it was a Wang computer, or we had a certain chunk of a Wang computer that was hooked up over the telephone at 110 baud, which was 10 characters per second. And whenever you were typing something, it was a thud, 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 as you were pressing the keys. And when you were running paper tape through the machine, because paper tape was your storage mechanism, it was a way of sending back to the computer your program in digital form. When you had got a listing or you were satisfactory, you would have it punched out on paper tape. In fact, the first subroutine libraries were actually libraries of snippets of paper tape covering different problems for different computers. And everybody's programmers got together and created these snippets of tape. And when they were doing programming, you'd have some new stuff, but you'd also pull out of the bag individual snippets of tape to do things like maybe calculating a square root or whatever kind of functions you were going to do. But by having them on paper tape, they could do what were essentially cut and paste operations to put your program together.
Man, paper tape, storage on paper tape just seems like it would just be so flimsy.
Well, actually, the tape was fairly sturdy, and it was a fairly standard software medium, even on mini computers and whatnot. In fact, is the only difference between some of the absolute bare bones sort of hobbyist, or, you know, is that when you get to a certain level of sophistication, you didn't use the teletype paper tape reader and writer. You used a separate device that could read and write printed tape much faster. And a lot of that stuff you see in a ticker tape parade is the used output of these kind of mechanical recording punch machines. They would punch stuff on paper, and every time that they would do that, they would also punch the 7 bits plus parity in a row of holes on your paper tape. Now, once things got sophisticated, they would fold things. You would take your paper tape over to a special reader in the front of the your computer, a refrigerator-high stack of different modules with different cards in them. But the way you started the tape is you put it into the reader with a little bit of naked serial ahead of you, but the whole thing is you put it there, and then you would start the tape reading, and the tape would go through its reader, and the keys would respond, and the printer would probably print out what it was seeing. And that's the name of that tune. And the teletype attached were for slow application. If you had to build something like an operating system for this particular configuration, you could use paper tape too, but it would be likely a number of different passes to get everything into the computer's memory. A nice feature of the memory of the time on most virtually all computers is it was magnetic. It may have been a bitch to get those bits in there, but while they were there, you know, if you turned the power off, it didn't all go away or go to complete crap.
Now that was awesome.
Also, if you shut down a core memory computer, you could stop its heartbeat, so to speak, and then with the right clip of the front panel switch, you could get it running again, and all of the stuff would basically be where you left it. So it would just start up from the same spot.
So how long could you like leave it off and still have the program?
Theoretically, years.
Okay.
Because it was stored in, there would be a matrix that looked like a window screen.
Hey, what happened?
What did you see happen?
All of a sudden, everything was quiet. Maybe you dropped off the channel.
And how long was I off channel?
Maybe about like 10 seconds, maybe.
I know what happened. Microsleep.
Wow. Is it time for bed?
Actually, I probably should sleep, but if you can probably look up most of this stuff if you want.
Yeah, I think I will. I think I'll look up some of those tape readers because I don't think I can remember even seeing one, but I think I will.
Also, the interesting thing about core memory is the cores were, they had X wires, Y wires, and then there would be a third wire, which would be a sense wire. And core memory, when read, they would put appropriate voltages to the X and Y wires, and if they got a pulse, that would be a 1, and if they didn't get a pulse, that would be a 0, because when the two voltages interacted, they would flip the magnetic polarity of the magnetic core. However, because reading was a destructive process, they would have to read the information out and then immediately write it back to the memory. So it was almost like the refresh process of dynamic memory.
Okay.
Now, also the interesting thing about these cores is that a lot of them that early on they were hand threaded in the Far East because you could get ladies in Japan or China or what have you thread these cores by hand. IBM later on developed machines to thread a whole bunch of cores and to test the cores and to do a lot of stuff. But also every generation of core memory ended up making the little donuts smaller. So the first generation was of a certain size, and then the next generation would not quite fit in the center of the donut until they got down to quite small sizes. But anyway, this stuff, I have read enough so that I could recite this sort of stuff as I have for hours, and I thank you for your patience.
Hey, no problem. It's really interesting. Yeah, like I said, I'm going to have to look up and see if I can get some good images of these paper tape readers and writers.
Well, one of the things when you got your Microsoft Basic back in the day, it did not come on a floppy disk. It did not come on a cassette tape or anything. Your Microsoft Basic would come with the early micros, the CPM era micros, or the pre-CPM micros, because a lot of stuff would have the tape reader to load the software, the commercial software, and audio cassettes used to record the actual data. But all of your software would come as paper tape. And in fact, a lot of the early Microsoft shipping, they would have copies of the Basic punched out on paper tape, and somebody would sit there and fold it into a fan fold style, and then they'd put that in an envelope and they'd ship it off to you.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then when you got it to your home computer, you could run it through a tape reader, which was a row of like a little electric eyes, and a light would be shined through, and each row of dots would be turned into one byte that was that your computer, the monitor in your computer could read, and that's how you would load your software before there was floppies. And even after there was floppy, in a lot of cases, the paper tape, because it was plain ASCII, would be far more compatible, because every person who made the disk interfaces and the disk drives and everything would have their own idea of what the format should be.
Right, right, yeah.
So being able to load the stuff into memory and then have your operating system write it out to your particular format meant that even if we had different disk format for the for a lot of the small programs, and you got to remember back in the day, sometimes the machine would only have 4 or 8 kilobytes of memory. Having a tape punch on your teletype console was the easiest way for you to send me a program and know that it was going to be reasonably compatible. Anyway. Thank you for your patience, and if you're able to pack it in, that's fine.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, I think it's bedtime for me. So maybe I'll leave the channel up and see if anybody else drops in.
Well, that's right now, that's my mission. I'm going to be here with my headphones on, and since I'm not going to be talking, I can read or hatch or even listen to YouTube, and then if I hear something, I can come out here and do the meet and greet thing. So I'm going to be minding the store. This reminds me of the good old days when I was doing security work, and I would be sitting at a desk in a little sort of looked like an oversized toll booth, and because you'd been up a lot of hours, especially when we were losing the contract and you were working 64-hour weeks, you would be caught by microsleeps like that. And some people didn't fight sleep as hard as I did, and they would just go to sleep. And, of course, if you fell asleep because you were in a warm little capsule and you had worked a long shift, you could be let go because you were not alert. But it was a constant struggle to stay awake. Well, stay conscious. Awake might have been overbilling yourself. Anyways, thank you, Verbal, for letting me rattle on.
Hey, no problem. All right, I'm going to hit the sack. Take it easy.
Okay, just don't hit it too hard. I don't want to get hurt. Anyways, I think I'll stay out here and see if somebody drops by. We're in with the farmers call the short rows. If we're going to wrap this up at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll just have another glass of Coke and motor on.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. You've been very, very patient and very helpful.
Oh, geez, my laptop's not with the guy right now in the house he's moved into. The van crashed or whatever, but what if these guys did a rubbish job and left the bag out on the sidewalk? Or pavement, I say, over here, but you know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Well, they're supposed to put everything into the van and then come back and get the other stuff, but some company's got to help him move stuff out. I'm going to have to probably tell them just take my SSD space out or something, or I don't know. They got, like, there's a company called Clevo in China or somewhere, and some of these companies buy in the Clevo laptops and then rebrand them and stuff a bit. So, like, my junior computer's laptop is really a Clevo laptop, or it was. But then getting these parts becomes a problem when it breaks, it turns out. And the Clevo only sell to businesses as well, like that, it sounds like, as well. Maybe mine that actually collapsed now, for real.
Maybe I don't see him.
Maybe he really has.
No,
he hasn't. He still is.
There you are. I saw Pokey pop in here every couple of minutes.
I saw that as well.
Yeah, I guess Lovecraft is just hanging out up at the lobby.
Who's Lovecraft? I've seen him around here. He's a part of the Linux Lugcast.
I guess he's a friend of the cast. I don't know him. I believe Mortensen knows him.
In some ways, it's when Christmas is over and the New Year, because it basically means that things are back to normal. The shops are open and at normal times, and restaurants and things as well.
Maybe traffic will be back to normal. People are...
Well, yeah, in a way, except I do have a school nearby, or two schools nearby even, so there was a school run at like 3:30 in the afternoon or 3 o'clock sort of thing, and in the morning as well. But that's not too bad around here, actually. Well, but actually, saying that, where I live as well, they're going to build a, down the road, they're going to build a massive arena for use for bands, for music, because there used to be an airport down there, and the airport's been closed on the airport for ages, but the big company that works on airplanes, one of them, Airbus, is still down there, and with their office, or some of their stuff is. But on the actual runway, they've started to build little houses already and stuff, and there's a little and things. But the big thing is, there's going to be an arena down there where big bands can come and play music and stuff. And it's going to be opening up in, I think, next year. It's where the airplanes were stalled before, the hangars or whatever, and then they're changing that into the arena, or refurbished it. And it's near the actual city as well, and where I am, but. But what it means is that it's going to get very busy around here in the future, probably at times, and the roads can't really be extended either. It's going to be a train station put down there. So I don't know quite. I say that this road is busier today as it is, like now, for example, but it's going to get even more busy at times once that arena comes. It's sad in a way, actually, how the world is sort of... how it's been built, well, our developed countries and stuff. It's like, you know, like, you want to go somewhere, well, okay, but you'd have to go travel on the road somewhere, yeah, be it a car or a bus or maybe a train sometimes. But we have to, like, travel these distances because of how it's all set out as well, or how a lot of things are set out, and you have to basically travel, if you like it or not, at times. Just how it is. They want to hear me say that.
Yeah.
And they could do with making the buses better here. Well, no, buses... Well, people complain about the buses around here, but they're not the worst, really. They're not too bad, really, I find, but they might not always be bang on time and things. And then they were talking about making a possibly an underground train, a metro, but it's going to cost £4 billion or more, and it's not going to happen, probably, but... would have been a nice idea, because other cities have them, like London and Brussels and New York, yeah. But we don't here. They had trams way back. That's gone. Yeah, they could do with improving public transport, and that's not just England. That's probably pretty much any country, really. Be that trains, buses, public transport. Is it any good where you are, public transport? Can you get on the bus and get around easily? Or is it just like, nope, you've got to drive?
I usually just drive. There's not a bus easier, that comes by.
Because it's a load easier to drive, yeah?
The what?
Because it's a load easier to drive where you are, yeah? Not try and get a bus or something.
No, I don't even think there's a bus stop. I mean, we have such a small town.
But you say it was in Chicago or nearby?
Hour north.
What time did you say? What, you're coming up to 7:08 AM?
Yeah, 6:50.
So it's 7. Yeah, 6 hours behind then.
5 or 6, depending on the time zone and the daily same time.
I mean, GMT or UTC, 0:00, yeah. What's in? That was the other thing. I said it's the net mine. Already and whatever, but even as humans, we messed that up. The idea that the day is 24 hours, yeah? Because you got daylight saving times, and whoever moved forwards as well. That's why the New Year show was 26 hours, see? 14 hours ahead of GMT, 12 hours behind. So even 24 hour day, we messed that up. The idea that we have 24 hours, nope, 26 hours now, actually. For the whole world. Right, it's testing, netminer, are you live still?
Maybe he went to get something.
Did he? Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've just been drinking, letting my ice water steep, so some of the ice melts, and then I'll drink a little more, letting the water that I've already drank rebalance my system.
And then we'll see you off for another 16 hours, netminer, like I said earlier. Oh, geez, that... That must collapse, I'm sure. 32 hours plus 16 hours. Imagine that, Archer.
No, I can't.
That's a long time, isn't it? To be awake.
Yeah, well, back around the turn of the century, I was doing this stuff all the damn time, and I was even getting paid. Now, not much, I was getting paid.
What, to be awake for a long time, Pete, yeah?
Yeah, I was a security guard at a condo complex near here. As far as traffic, I live in the Boston area, and, well, Boston drivers are known. It hasn't been proven that some of them get their driver's license out of a Cracker Jack box.
That's funny, that's what my wife says.
When I was over at MIT at the Model Railroad Club, in one of the temporary buildings that was left over from World War II, a little bit before the turn of the century when they tore it down, somebody was saying that our buddy's wife is getting her driver's license. I suggest everybody get a Chrysler product, preferably an M1 Abrams.
Well, that Boston drivers were not very good, is that what you're saying?
That's British understatement at its best.
Yeah, well, yeah. What, you're saying they're worse? They're really, really, really bad, yeah?
Well, you have a real problem here. For one thing, according to videos I've seen, they used to have special parking areas and whatnot where they would educate young drivers about the rules of the road and they would learn to signal and all sorts of stuff. But in modern times, the young drivers are thrown into manic traffic right out of the gate, so they never really have a chance to settle into knowing how to do it right. They're just doing the best they can in a very manic situation with a lot of people honking their horns and whatnot.
Yeah, no, that's not very good, no.
And a lot of older drivers push a younger driver to do something stupid, which is why it costs something, I don't know, $5,000 a year for insurance for an inexperienced driver.
No, in the UK it's very, very, very strict. You really don't just put people out on the road, on the main road. You have to do the whole theory test, pass that, and also to have the perception test, pass that. Plus, you have to pass the practical test, and then you can drive with someone who drove long enough. Over 21 or something, but as you're learning, but also with the motorway again, you're not, or the highway, you'd say over there, you definitely don't go on the motorway or the highway until you pass the normal test. You're not allowed on there. You can't do driving lessons on the motorway, not the normal ones. Maybe later on you can actually get some special motorway lessons after you pass the normal test, but they don't. But the drivers will not go on the motorway or the highway. And the insurance is going to be quite expensive usually for new drivers as well. And they had a company who gave the women cheaper insurance aimed at women, and I think they got in some trouble for that. Like, hey, you can't just do that, because men, the idea was that women would crash less, or hardly ever, and men would crash more. That, we lost Archer now as well.
I'm still here. I'm going to go grab some coffee.
Your coffee and netmine is here just about, and I hope somebody heard what I was saying about car stuff in the UK as well.
Yeah, I don't know if it's different for women for the car insurance or not.
There was an advert. It was a company called Sheila's Wheels, and they used to have TV adverts, and it was like, yeah, Sheila's Wheels, woohoo, and aimed at young women in particular, probably. Learn a driver and like, hey, you're female, okay, well, in that case, you can get car insurance for load cheaper than the men. Look, come with us, come to us, Sheila's Wheels. But then they got into some flack about that, like, you can't just do that, come on. But a bit like, there was a chocolate, well, not the same thing, really, but there was a chocolate bar called a Yorkie as well, over here. And for ages, there was a sign on it, and it basically had a woman, and it was crossed out, and it was advertised as Yorkie, like man's best chocolate, manly chocolate or something like that. And again, they got then in some trouble later on when you got people going, hey, you can't do that. That's, you know, so they had to drop that as well. Because people are people, I think, is a general idea, regardless of gender. Well, it's supposed to be like that. But in reality, there are a few differences. But, but really, people are people. It shouldn't be so much about what gender someone is or not.
Well, they both can be pretty aggressive at times, especially when it comes on driving.
Both can be aggressive, eh? Yeah. That's true. Women can also get aggressive on the road. Not just men when they're driving, yeah.
Maybe sometimes they don't realize how fast they're driving.
Well, the women or the men?
Either one. Because they get in those big SUVs and then it doesn't matter how fast you go because nobody's going to pull you over.
The big cars.
The big Suburbans.
Yeah, we've got, maybe it's probably the same thing really over here. There are a few of these cars that are like much higher up and they're quite a bit higher up and they're definitely big cars as well. And they're called, they've got a name here. I can't think of it now. But it's probably the same thing basically. And I guess in a way it's true. And unless you go and crash or something, then it becomes a problem, doesn't it? Fine and good until you crash the car somewhere.
That's what I'm trying not to do. And I let everybody else go faster around me. I'm like, I'm slowing down. I just turned 50 over the past couple of months and just don't feel like going fast anymore.
Oh, you've come old. Oh, you're like, hey, I'm an old man now. All right, I'm going to drive really slow.
Not really slow, just the speed limit. Nobody likes it.
I remember seeing a documentary on TV a few years ago. It was in America, and it was about the motorway. And there was an old woman who was driving so slow on the motorway, or highway, yeah. We say motorway, you say highway, but yeah. So I'm going to say the motorway, and I think you understand what I mean now. Right, on the motorway. she was driving so slow on the motorway or highway that the police had to follow her and pull her over, yeah. Not because she was driving fast, but actually because she was driving, like, maybe 5 miles per hour or something stupid on the motorway, yeah?
Oh, I don't do that. Drive about 7, what's normal, kilometers? 100 kilometers?
No, we have miles per hour in the UK. It's Europe that has the kilometers per hour. Their kilometer per hour is like 120, which is... No, our speed limit is basically 70 on the motorway. 70 miles per hour.
That's about right.
Yeah. Although some people are going to go 80, aren't they? Or 90 sometimes. But yeah, 70 is probably about right. You're going quite fast. Well, you're gonna. If you crash with 70, you might die anyway. So, it's the one other thing, isn't it? If you crash at 70 miles per hour, well, you might survive and get quite hurt in the car. Depends. I do think there's too many cars and stuff. I'm looking at a road now; it's busy. It's just people don't care. I mean, the cars pollute and stuff too. People just don't care enough. Oh yeah, I'll drive around and see whoever. I'll go into my place. I'll do whatever. Oh, who cares? And then the next person, same attitude. Oh, I'm okay. Some people might have to drive in for work or the school run or take somebody to hospital or something. That's a bit different. But there's also a lot of sort of joy riders, I think, just out in the car because they can. Yeah.
That's the way I feel about the motorcycles. I think they're out joyriding.
Some of them probably are, yeah.
Yeah, that's even more dangerous.
Well, if it crashes into a car or something. But motorcycle's probably more fun as well. I'm not that I've drove a motorcycle, but I'll be on the back of one saying that. But yeah. I know I'm going to do some electric cars now, but that's a bit behind. That should happen more so, I think. You can also overdrink on water, netminder. Not that likely, but could potentially happen.
I'm just settling down here.
Going to sleep, huh?
Just taking it a little easy.
Is it light where you are now, netminder?
Yeah, it's 8 in the morning. It's quite light. Well, within reason. It's partly
maybe
cloudy.
A bit cloudy or something, but light, yeah?
Still a bit dark here.
Definitely light here, although it's a cloudy day out there. Well, not too bad, actually. What are you going to do this year, Archer? What are you going to do this year, Archer?
I stepped away.
Oh, you didn't hear me now. I just asked you twice. Okay, right. I said, what are you going to do this year, Archer?
I just keep working. I don't know yet. I haven't made any plans.
Working? What are you doing?
Electronic technician.
What's that tech stuff? Yeah.
Working on high voltage machines, drives, spindles.
Okay, yeah.
Who just popped in?
Netminer has made it after. He's still alive after being awake, I think, 34 hours it is now, something like that.
Good, I just popped in the morning, so I missed all the opportunity to pipe in before.
Say that again?
I missed the opportunity to pipe in before.
Well, it was very heated last night in places, so as you heard.
Well, that was out, so maybe I'll have to listen back later in the year.
You can listen to them arguing later in the year, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was nice. A little gladiator fight.
It was entirely too much like home.
But that's happened before. I've heard this before from them and others.
Well, the whole idea is that because of my background, I'm a little sensitive sometimes, especially when I'm tired.
Literally, when all that went on, I kind of dulled it. I knew it would go on for a while, so I kind of dulled it really low, and then I just like crashed over about 45 minutes. And then Kieran, who is in Ping, goes, hey, what's going on with these guys? Probably not why you'll never see Joe in here in Tekken, because Moss is always off. We kind of run out. So has it officially ended?
Yes. Yes, it has.
Okay.
It
wasn't too sure. And
it ended officially about an hour and 12 minutes ago, is it?
I think that's about the time I woke up and I noticed my phone was still in here, and then I tried to click on the app and it crashed. So I was like, oh, it's a sign.
We said goodbye to 2022. It's history now. In the whole world as well, yeah. And I think 2023 is going to be a better year for many of us. Well, not all of us. I mean, we can die and, you know, things can happen, but with the exception of that, there'll be conferences again for like FOSDEM in Brussels. That's a good one for open source. I'm looking forward to that in a month's time. Hi-Fi show as well. Might be the other thing on in England again, I don't know. And obviously America's got conferences too. But that's a bit far away for me to go to in America.
I prefer conferences over there. I mean, they're here. They're okay here.
Wait. Have you been to them over here as well?
I go over there quite. I mean, I used to.
What, England? What?
England and Scotland. I can't.
Was it you I talked to last night as well? Was that the other guy?
I'm the one of the two.
I talked to a bit last night. You said you've been to Old Camp, yeah?
Multiple times.
Yeah.
But not the Sheffield one. You claimed the same in Sheffield.
Yeah, that's right. That was the other American guy then that I met in Sheffield.
Gotcha. Yeah. No. I had not. I think that was that one of those two.
2017 was Canterbury. Gila?
Yeah.
Yeah. And 2018 was Sheffield. Yeah.
Those.
And 2019 was Manchester.
No, I did Manchester. Yeah, I had missed the two before. I'm not even sure.
I'm hoping there'll be a Nold Camp 2023 somewhere, really. But I think they were looking for new organisers or something as well. The lug, your own lug, yeah?
Yeah, there's a lug here. They meet up, a place called Tio. I go occasionally. Or there's...
Did you go to Freeno Live as well?
Say what, I'm sorry?
Have you been to Freeno Live, or did you miss that?
Oh, I have not been to that.
No, that was in my city, Bristol, the one I'm by. But, yeah, the lug that I've got is not particularly good either anymore. I mean, the mailing list is okay and still going, but actually trying to meet people at a pub again been an absolute nightmare this year. Disaster trying to get us there at the same time, and then there's only about two or three of us anyway, and it's like, oh. Some of them are very old in that group as well.
And weird arc here. I mean, it's turned into a political racial thing. I'm a hippie man, so I go in and they're like claiming, making these weird claims. Like, we only use it because it's secure and you can help us cover up things. Or I'm like, no, I gotta go.
Really?
Figure it out yourself.
What hippie, like oh, we can secure, cover up?
Well, one guy joined like Tech and Coffee here in this, and he joined the community and everything else, and different politics, different everything else. made all these weird claims, like when I told him Ubuntu was based off of the South African word and it's based in England, he was like, no, it's an American OS. Linux is American. I'm like, no, it's kind of Finnish when you think. He's getting all, like, testy.
Yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, Linux is actually Finnish. When we're talking
when you point out the facts to them, they think it's like something
when
else.
You're talking about the kernel, it's Finnish, like it or not, Linus Torvalds is Finnish.
I know, like it or not, it's what it is.
Like it or not, is even though Chronicle's been based in London, or the office there and whatever, really, you could say it's South African, because Mark Shuttleworth is South African.
Yeah, so...
I've actually met him once, Mark Shuttleworth, that was good.
Oh, that's awesome, I never...
Yeah. FOSDEM 2016, right? Oh. In Brussels, Belgium, yeah. I was there for the tablet talks. They were gonna release the Ubuntu tablet, yeah. And there were two talks or something. And I was sitting there, and then there was a talk. I was like, okay, yeah. And then some guy started answering all the questions. So the speaker, and I was speaking there, like sitting there, thinking like, hey, that guy really seems to know what he's on about, doesn't he? And then it clicked with me because I've seen videos before. It was like, oh, it's Mark Shuttleworth. Of course.
Oh my god.
Mark Shuttleworth. Yeah, of course. Ugh, of course, it's Mark Shuttleworth. And I think somebody else might have done it. And he went up, and Richard Stallman in Bath as well, 2013 at the end of his talk. But anyway, so I've met him before. But Richard Stallman, so yeah, sorry, Mark Shuttleworth. And I was like, oh, Mark Shuttleworth.
I'm not sure if Stallman might be a nickname. Yeah, I guess.
Well, he goes all over the place, or he did, and yeah. But Mark Shuttleworth, it was like, oh, Mark Shuttleworth, okay. And I think some other guy went up to talk to him, maybe. I know what I did. I went up to him, and I was like, hi, and he shut my hand as well. And I was like, yeah, I kind of moved away from Ubuntu to some other distro. Although I'm very interested in this phone project and start a tablet, and that's kind of winning me back over. And I could have said a better question, really, but I said to him, how was your trip to the space station, yeah? But instead I said, oh, a bit like Q&A online in the past. Oh, well, Ubuntu every game mainstream. I could have asked him a better question, to be fair. And he was like, no, probably not. It'll be a bit niche. But he did shake my hand and he said hello, and, you know, and it didn't last very long, but but then I texted my friend from the LUG and I was like, guess who I just met today? Mark Shuttleworth. And it was like, yeah, I mean, it was nice.
Oh my goodness. Well, that got weird alone.
What have you got?
My phone's telling me I need to do...
to what? To wake up? Oh, wait, you're already awake.
Oh, no, it's something I need to add vinegar to my HVAC. It's something...
AC.
Well, so here, because I'm in Florida, to even bearably live during the summertime, you need HVAC, a whole house.
Air conditioner.
Yeah, so, like, I just had one installed, literally, out of pocket, was $10,000, a new one, because...
What, so even in January, it's still got very hot, yeah?
Yeah, so I barely turn it on nowadays, but, I mean, I'll turn it on, like, kind of low, so it just keeps okay. You're supposed to add vinegar to it, especially here in Southern, all this buildup, the little spout would pour in, like, a cup of... Every 3 months, change filter, you know. I have things in my calendar, I'm just trying to figure, like... What was going off that told me I had to do it right now, today? I'll be right back. Drop some vinegar, and before I forget.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to smell well.
It's not a bad thing. We clean with it.
I love it. Just when you run it through. Yeah, as soon as I do it, I chase your porch.
Good morning, Warden C. Good morning, Warden C.
Sebastian, you there? Someone asked what I was going to be doing this year. Hopefully in the near future, I'm going to get hold of an old laptop and put Proxmox on it. First, I gotta figure out my friend's Windows issues. Everything's heating up, and they won't let me put anything but Windows on it. Why is that? Well, I want her to get rid of Windows, but she's comfortable with it.
Like, nowadays, since I stopped working, I don't need those problems. So I even have friends that you got Windows? No, don't do Windows. I'm done. I did 30-some-odd.
I understand. I only want it because her old laptop is the one I'm trying to get a hold of for the Proxmox project.
Yeah, when my wife was doing things, I put a laptop, an older laptop with Elementor, use that all the time. I mean, it looked like a Mac to
her. My wife loves her Fedora laptop, too. It's the only OS that could get past the new BIOSes. Maybe I just didn't know enough. I had wanted to put Slackware on there, on this particular laptop, but didn't work out.
He's mid for.
Hey, Pokey.
Now I've got another long count. Yeah, I've got my new machine, but it will be sometime Tuesday before I get the SSD to put in.
I see Pokey just popped in and then out again, just to say Happy New Year. I was hoping to talk to him.
Well, I'm back. I was away, kind of listening. So we got Quirus, yeah?
I'm still here.
What was that?
I'm still here. I was going to see if Netminder does anything social, like on the Mastodon. So it would be neat to get on with him.
No.
I don't know. He has to go into Dreamland and he's still sociable at the moment, but I don't know for how much longer.
I just was wondering if he did anything like Mastodon.
So Mastodon is a big hype right now. Well, at least for some of the tech people. In fact, somebody had on Facebook Messenger has left it for Mastodon. But I remember something called Identi.cat. Anybody ring a bell with that?
Identica?
Yes. That used to be really good, but that was like 2008 or something.
Have you used Friendly?
And then it became status, status.net as well, and then the FSF took it over, everything, it all collapsed. And Pump.io got forked into Pump.io, and it all kind of collapsed. But as an open source alternative to Twitter, very good at the time. Have you used it? Yeah, somebody else talking there.
Have you used Friendica?
Don't know. Identica used to be a thing that was good.
Well, Friendica is pretty much like Mastodon because it's, you know, a Fediverse type. Like, not as many servers. It's not as well used. But Friendica, I think, was the natural progression of, I don't know. Just guessing.
It's a shame. I even got to meet the Canadian guy who started Identica in Brussels at FOSDEM one of those years. And I was there and I was like, he's the guy who did Identica. Okay. And I think he had to stop it because he was running his own server and had to pay himself. I think it was to do with that as well.
Yeah, as to your question, Archer, I have no social presence to speak of.
Okay, no, just asking.
Netminder is not sociable, so no. We get to Tatrim here and that's about it.
And then the Lugcast, right?
What is it? Yeah, I don't know, who's on the Lugcast?
Yeah.
And I'm never on there.
I don't really podcast anymore. I never really did properly. I mean, I've been on some other podcasts slightly as a guest or whatever, but I've been on this New Year's show, but I don't really podcast, and I don't really tend to listen to podcasts either. I did listen to some of the old stuff, not that old, when I was on HPR the other night. But normally I would prefer to listen to some nice metal music, yeah, or something with a bang or some sort of music, you know.
I'm more of an 80s synth pop.
Plus with a podcast, you have to listen to it in the slow speed for hours. All the joke is you put it onto, what, 2+ speed or 3+ speed, yeah?
I can't do 2 speed. I do about 1.5, 1.8.
Yeah, somebody said something like, have Cat 2 or someone read a DD manual. At 2+ speed. May get used to your own voice. Same with videos. Videos is a bit worse sometimes. Like, is that how I look like as well? Oh, no.
Yeah, and videos drag on.
Well, I do public speaking as well. So I tend to get my speech in Toastmasters. I don't know if you've heard of that. And I tend to get my video, my speeches recorded then as well. But then at first you're like, I look like that and I spit sound like that. Well, and then get used to that a little bit. Lots of people say they don't like hearing their own voice.
I did radio for a while. I literally hate my voice. I listen to myself, I'm like, no.
I know, lots of people are like that. I guess it sounds okay to other people then, or they hear it in their certain way, but when you hear yourself, your brain is like, oh no, oh.
Well, I have to do a lot of the editing for some of the... God. I sound so nasally. I sound so horrible. Why do I sound so horrible?
Well, my unasked opinions, you don't sound horrible to me.
Everybody sounds good in here. I just don't like to listen to my own voice.
Now, is there anything you'd like to know, Archer, or anything on your mind? I'd like your interest. I find it difficult sometimes to be social because of numerous factors including the way I'm programmed.
Well, that's fine. Your programming is fine. People are people, and
Now you have me. I have that Depeche Mode song going off in my head now.
Oh.
I told you I was 80s.
How nice did that be?
What was that?
That was like a Hello Moto thing.
That was a Morton C phone.
Yeah, it's a Motorola.
That's all I use. In fact, I need to get the new 22. Thinking about the stylus. I need more batteries.
But I need...
So I bought the stylus for my goddaughter, and she's loving it.
Yeah, they have.
She's 18.
Yeah, they have obviously.
Morton, so you're coming.
Yeah, I'm gonna go get headphones.
Get Rolaphone. Rolaphone. Rolla. Look at the Google that whatever search engine you're gonna use. But basically, you can have that. I've got this. You can have it with the Rolla OS, which is based on Android with the privacy stuff, or even better than that, you can have it with UB port. So basically, the Ubuntu Touch, you know, living on the community. So on what's actually new hardware, the Rolaphone 2.2 2022, yeah, and the other one was only like 2 years ago or something as well. So, and there's also a robust version, a more robust for anybody who works in factories or whatever. So the idea, again, people think, yeah, no one sells Ubuntu phones. That's not true. You can get a Rolaphone. Comes in from Germany. And I've got the recently-ish, you know, last few months, I've got the Rolaphone 2.2, the normal one, and I also got the other one in the more robust thing. But very nice phones, and they crowdfunded, and yeah, he'll be buying off one of these Linux companies. These companies actually care about the stuff that we care about, instead of buying on Motorola or any of that nonsense. Linux, the phone operating system is great. Okay, they might lack apps, but some of them can emulate the apps anyway, depending on what you got, or you can set up Anbox or something. But yeah.
How's my sound now?
A little low, but.
Did anyone hear me talk about the Rolaphone?
Motorola?
Rolaphone, Rolla. It was crowdfunded about 2 years ago, the first one. And now they've had the Rolaphone 2.2. There's also a more robust version of the phone, the X. It's called from Hello Welt Systems now, the company in Germany. But basically, you can have the Rolla OS, which is Android with like one of those more privacy-respecting versions with some changes, you know. Or, even better than that, you can have UB ports on there, the Ubuntu Touch. You know, the UB ports, what they're doing is amazing. That operating system is very nice. Yes, it might have the app, some people go, oh, can it run Android apps? Well, you can get Anbox working or something for certain apps, if that's the problem. But you have a choice between the two, Rolla OS or Ubuntu Touch, and you can reflash it yourself or send it back. I've got the... Yeah, no, the phones themselves are very nice. The hardware looks nice. It feels nice. And you'd actually be supporting a company who cares about the sort of stuff that we care about instead of Motorola or whoever, who doesn't really care. They don't care less. They sell Android. And that's, you know, that's how it is. It's Android or iPhone in the mainstream. Anything else is not mainstream. But some of these things are great. Like Ubuntu Touch, UB ports, Rolaphone, and I'm saying Rolaphone because that's where you can buy something pre-installed with it as well. Because the old stuff like the MX4 is obviously not really sold anymore, the BQ and all that. But and all those Sailfish OS that you can put onto certain devices from a lot of former Nokia developers and things like that.
Yeah, I've looked at the Bolaphone before. You know if they ship that to the US?
Yes, they should ship it to the US now. It's been originally it was crowdfunded. That's happened. So they've released the old Rolaphone. I couldn't get hold of one of those. Well, I got not the normal one, but I got the Rolaphone X, the other one, the more robust version. So I do have one of those as well. And then they had a crowdfunding campaign for the Rolaphone 2.2. And I believe you can just buy it on the German website, yeah. And have it sent to the US as well, yes.
That's cool. I have I think it's a Xiaomi Redmi Note 7 that I have UB ports on.
Well, yeah, oh, right. Xiaomi, yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah. It's a Chinese thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a pain to get it unlocked and everything.
I think I read that was one of the devices that could support it. But the thing with the Vodafone is obviously it's pre-installed. You know, they're supporting it. It's you can buy it with the Ubuntu Touch straight out, pre-installed.
That's even better.
Yeah, or the Vodafone OS pre-installed. You have to make a choice between the two, but you can also then reflash yourself if you know what you're doing anyway, or send it back. But yeah, that's actually pre-installed is great as an option.
One of the guys I used to work with, he has Calyx OS. You can
Kali,
flash Kali, into
Calyx.
Calyx. Calyx.
Are you Kali or is this something else? Because what K-A-L-I-O-S? I think that's the file. If it's
Kali,
sorry, say that again. C-A. If it's Kali OS, K-A-L-I-O-S, it's the. I think it's the Firefox fork. What's left of the Firefox OS stuff. But if it's something else, then
something else. C-A-L-Y-X-O-S. It's an Android system that it runs on phones that have special chips in it, so you know everything is secure end-to-end when you're using it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wait. There's this Cayenne mod. Did you say C-A-Y?
Yes.
There's a Cayenne mod or whatever it's called, or is that or maybe it's that. Is it one of those Android, more privacy-respecting Android-based OSs as well?
Yes, it is. I put it in the chat.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a few of those. I mean, that's what Vodafone OS is as well. It's basically Android with the privacy stuff in there. Ubuntu Touch, on the other hand, I mean, that's a decent operating system. I mean, people go, oh, but it's based on 16.04 still, and it's like, well, yeah, but they were going to be based on 20.04, and it doesn't really matter, I don't think, because it was always behind the desktop like that anyway, but I don't think that matters so much because the actual operating system is great. You got your terminal, it's very desktop-like. You got Unity 8 and things. And the App Store is not overloaded. I mean, last time I looked, I could go through all the apps and just figure out what I wanted. The problem with Android and iOS, I find as well, is there just way too many apps in the App Store. I can't go through 2 million apps and decide which apps I actually want like that, you know, bang on properly. There's too many apps.
There's too many garbage apps that want to inundate you with ads.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well, basically. So that's exactly it as well. And it's not just 2 million apps. There's a lot of garbage apps or junk apps that give you adverts. That's what I found exactly that with Android as well. When I started, even with just a few apps on, start getting adverts somewhere or things popping up, and you're like, what? Why? Where? What? Where did that come from? And before you know it, you're sitting there with adverts on your phone. Yeah. Whereas with something like Ubuntu Touch, on the other hand, the native apps are, you know, made by people who, they're not garbage apps. Well, there might be a few in there somewhere, depending on what you call garbage, but no, they won't be giving you adverts, and it will be, and it's mostly good. I refuse to use WhatsApp, by the way. I don't use WhatsApp. I refuse to use WhatsApp. Never actually use WhatsApp. I've thought about having it installed possibly because I have a public speaking group on the committee. Why don't you join the WhatsApp group? No, I don't want to join it. There's a group for the members too. No, I don't want to join the WhatsApp group. And then my family, you have a vague group, but I think WhatsApp, no thanks. I've got Facebook Messenger. Yes, Facebook and WhatsApp now, I know, but that's not the point I'm getting at here. But yeah, I do have Facebook Messenger for those sort of mainstream few people that I might want to talk to. I've got email. I've got, don't really use IRC that much anymore, but occasionally I might log in. I'm not really on Mumble, but not for this. But there's just too many different ways to communicate. It's a bit like when my public speaking groups had to go online in the pandemic. I was forced to use Zoom, yeah, although there is no meeting. I remember I said to somebody, can't we use something like Jitsi maybe, or it was like, no, but there's just too many ways to communicate, and it's a bit like Mastodon that people are talking about. Yes, I could sign up, but on the other hand, I don't really need that. Yes, that's maybe open source, great. Yeah, there's too many ways to communicate, but when we want to communicate, it should be open source, ideally, as well. Open standards, open source. But unfortunately, a lot of stuff is not that is popular. WhatsApp, Zoom. And I know that one of the Free Software Foundation guys, Bradley Thingy, was definitely refusing to use Zoom. Whereas Karen Sandler, on the other hand, who somebody might know the name here, over here, she gave in a little bit because of what she was working doing, I think, as well. And even that Bradley guy would refuse to go on things unless it were proprietary, I think, as well. But that's kind of amazing with some of the FSF-type people, how they will really put their morals and ethics first, even if they can't do certain things. Any comments? No, somebody must have heard me.
Yeah, I know the name Karen Sandler. She had artificial heart.
Yeah, that's right. She's been public about that as well. She has she's got some sort of heart condition. Maybe it's bigger than it should be or something. I'm not sure quite, but she's been public about it. And then she needed a device or something to keep her alive, basically.
Right, it monitors her heart.
Accept the problem now as well. Well, she had to give in here. What I heard is that she needed some sort of device, medical device, to keep her alive as well. But it's run by software, and all the software was proprietary software. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so, I think I heard her and Bradley both talk in the past.
What, in the past?
And when she talked, I think it was
Bradley Kuhn, like
talking pacemaker.
Make or whatever it is, but it's run by proprietary software, and of course Karen would prefer to have an open source or free software, you know, but by the sounds of it, there was nothing like that as such in the medical you know, tech like that, so she's stuck for now with this proprietary software. Yeah,
I believe when she looked into it further, the FDA, the government agency in the US, doesn't test that. They trust the manufacturer to test it and say that it's secure and works properly.
Probably do. And so she's stuck, even though she doesn't trust it probably herself fully, but she's got like no choice.
Well, things will change if a politician, pacemaker or medical device gets hacked.
And Bradley Coombe, as he's called, yeah, he's refused to use things like Zoom. Karen Sandler gave in and has used Zoom for teaching or something, it sounded like, on virtual FOSDEM, etc. But Bradley Coombe, he made it quite clear that, no, he's not using Zoom, it's proprietary software. And he said that he would even refuse to do speeches online and stuff if they were using Zoom, even though he'd offered to do speeches and, yeah. But that's what they do. They stick to their ethics as much as possible, these kind of people, which is quite amazing. Even if it means that the Wi-Fi doesn't work on some device, it could be, or whatever it is, you know, because the driver is proprietary, yeah? Although Richard Stallman does apparently go on websites normally. That was news about a few years ago at Leave a Planet, that story. Yeah, FOSDEM is good. Should be there, like, Bradley Coombe, Karen Sandler. Those people should be there, but there's also going to be a security dev room, it looks like, this time. So that's going to be great to go to again. Are you still here? Somebody's still here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been to FOSDEM? Have you been to FOSDEM?
I have not.
Okay. You need to go to FOSDEM, especially if you've been to Old Camp and you come over. It was you, wasn't it? Or was that the other guy? Or you get mixed up. Was it you who said you'd been to Old Camp, yeah? Or was that the other guy?
Somebody else.
Oh, right. Well, either way, if you're going to come over to a conference in Europe, I highly recommend FOSDEM. And it's happening at this first weekend in February again. And it's like the biggest open source free software conference in Europe. It's internationally recognized as well. And yes, people like Karen Sander and Bradley Coombe come to that as well.
So I usually go to the Southeast Linux in the Ohio Linux Fest. I'm in Ohio, or that's where I live. I've been to the Texas Linux Fest once, and in Ohio we used to have a electronics hobbyist hacker convention called Not a Con that I used to go to, but they lost funding and stuff and fell through.
Yeah, I would go. I would be interested in going to some of the American ones, but problem is, obviously, well, it's the same for you if you're going to come over here, really. It's the same problem, but the other way around, is that you have to basically pay a load of money on a plane flight, probably, to begin with. And then you have to sit on that plane for about maybe 6, 7, 8 hours, or well, 7 hours or something, to flying over, which isn't much fun either. And it's all money, isn't it? Somewhere to stay when you're over, food, etc.
Yeah, I actually just took my second international flight. I'm in Thailand right now.
Somebody said that somebody was in Thailand, and I didn't really understand earlier, but maybe they were talking about you.
They were probably talking about me.
Yeah, that makes sense. So somebody's coming in from Thailand. What? Oh. But okay, if you're in Thailand, yeah, if it was you, that makes sense then. Why are you in Thailand?
Yeah.
Why are you in Thailand?
I'm visiting my best friend, and we're seeing if we'll probably get married.
Best friend? What, you found somebody online from Thailand?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Online, yeah? And she was a scammer, and it's got scams on dating sites and things now. It's horrible.
When I first got on the internet in 95, I always looked for pen pals, because I always loved that when I was a kid. I had a pen pal.
Yeah, I did that as well, like 11 years old sort of thing, got the internet, and I did have like more two or three pen pals, yeah.
We'd released balloons with our information on it, and they made it over to Europe, and most of us got letters.
Was one of your pen pals from Thailand?
No. I had pen pals from Europe when I was a kid. When I got on the internet in 95, I tried finding people around the world, but most of the time I'd find people close to me that wanted to cheat on their husbands. They were in unhappy marriages. And, of course, all the scammers and stuff. But when her and I started talking, we finally video chatted, she told me that she didn't want my money. She wasn't going to send me money, and she didn't need a man in her life. And I told her that was wonderful, because I didn't need a man in my life either.
Right.
I've talked to tons of people on the internet over the years, and it's usually scammers, people who want to get married tomorrow, which is just a bad.
No, I know. I've talked to loads of people on the internet over the years too, and it seems these dating sites are free ones anyway. Also, it's awful. It's just horrible. But you can occasionally get some interesting people that you find and get to know online.
Anybody really awesome I find, I usually stay friends with them for between 2 weeks and 2 months, and then for whatever reason, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that can happen too.
Or they do something really crazy and I'm gone. She's we talk every day, and she's been wonderful. I ended up
having something
to
really
go over,
crazy. You said like what?
People I'm talking to, or me?
Well, you said that they do something really crazy and then they're gone. What does that mean, really?
One time I did talk to somebody in a couple messages, and we went out and had lunch and watched a movie. And when the movie was over, she was like, I really need to know, is this going to end in a marriage? Or like right that second, she needed a decision. And I was like, at this point, absolutely not.
Well, I had somebody else laughing there as well. Was that you?
Pardon?
Well, I heard somebody laughing there as well, or was that you? I don't know. Some of them want to rush stuff too quickly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For all the scammers or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, lots of scammers, lots of, well, and I also tried not to talk to anybody close to me, because, I don't know. I think it's easier to find out if you are really compatible on a friend level before relationship level, the further you are away.
It's difficult, but what I think as well, and I was having this chat with Netmine earlier amongst other things, and this was part of it, but I'm not sure if he's still here now saying that. That's just, Netmine, are you still here? Maybe he really is asleep now.
Oh yeah, he'd be talking about
after 35, 6, 7 hours, yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad he's asleep. I think we're dating. Well, no, dating sites are awful anyway. Scammers, as we were saying. But what I was thinking as well is that some people have with open source and stuff have got some really extreme passions and interests, or they're kind of really into it. And some people, it might be because of autism, Asperger's, I don't know, but some people would even pick doing their special thing, let's say with open source, whatever it is, be it programming some niche, obscure project that hardly anybody uses it, be it testing updates, quality assurance, be whatever they're doing, right? But they would pick developers, packagers, whatever they're doing, but they would pick that, and that would be the thing that makes them most happy in life as well. And they would pick that over anything else, pretty much, including finding love, having a partner, right? Although, saying that, of course, there are people with girlfriends and stuff, too, that are into this. There's a spouses and partners tour in Brussels, for example, at Fosdem, where you can, their wives and girlfriends can go and look around Brussels whilst the men are in, wherever in, at the conference. But I had somebody years ago who said to me, like, oh, why are you looking for a girlfriend on a dating site? I said to him one day, I'm on some dating site. And he was like, why are you doing that? And he gave me and he was in his 50s, early 50s, he gave me a bit of a nasty British saying to sort of say, like, yeah, why are you doing that? Waste of time, don't stop doing that. Well, it's kind of a good saying, but it's a bit nasty in the context. He gave it in. And I wasn't doing much, and he was like, why don't you join the quality assurance team? Why don't you become like a packager? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And that's what he was doing. But he was unemployed at the time, and he was going to go back into work and be self-employed, had a plan, worked in factories in the past. He ended up dying of lung cancer instead. But I've been thinking about that time since, because I'm going to be doing a speech later on in March or something. I want to talk about some of the stream passion stuff, I think, if I can do it right. And I'm thinking, like, do these people... How was I saying? And also, when he died, he didn't just die. He decided he knew he'd got lung cancer, and so he donated 2 or 3 of his computers to the quality insurance. So even in death, he still wanted to contribute, because that project meant so much for him, see? And there was a story of somebody in Gnome, apparently, and they fixed a bug. They were going to die as well, but they fixed a bug with their feet, apparently, in Gnome 2 before they died, about a day or so before they died. And it's like, if that's not extreme passion or whatever, extreme interest, etc., what is? And also, it's a bit like, why do they have that? Why are some of these people so passionate? But I don't know, but maybe it's linked to autism or Asperger's somewhere. I mean, I had this chat with Netminder earlier, if it just makes sense. Well,
I'm passionate about not using Windows, and mostly Apple.
But that's a bit different, though. That's like nearly everybody uses Linux will say, hey, I don't really like using Windows.
There's a couple of us at work that are trying to push together to allow us to have a Red Hat on our workstations and all leave if they continue to refuse, because our job is so difficult using Windows to manage the Linux with all the restrictions they have on us.
That's a good point with that as well. But like, it's
and all the security.
But some of these people as well, these are so-called passionate people, they will have a 9-to-5 job, let's say. It could be what you're doing, whatever. It doesn't matter. Some sort of tech job or whatever. But then, when they come home, they don't just go and go, hey, I'm at home now, I'm going to eat some dinner or whatever, I'm going to watch TV or whatever. In fact, many of them will probably come home and be like, you know what? I'm home now, it's my time. Okay, I'm now going to contribute to my project, my open source project, as well on the same day, yeah? Even though they're not getting paid to contribute, they're not even being paid to work to do that open source project, but they do it anyway because they think it's such a good thing to do, or whatever the reason is, and they have the passion, and the next day they're probably doing the same thing again, some of these people, and it's quite amazing, really. And some of the projects as well are a bit niche. It's a bit like, or a bit like you need some technical expertise for this. The OpenSSL project had a bug in 2014 that you may have probably heard of, actually, called Shellshock. Remember that? Do you remember hearing about Shell Shock?
Yeah.
Shell Shock, yeah. I remember hearing this, yeah. And it sounded like, apparently, it was a small little library or project, open source, about 15 developers or something, and some people were supposed to be checking the code as well. But this feature got put in that had a bug in it. Both men didn't pick up on the bug. They both didn't realize the bug was there. And then it got found out about and exploited by criminals, and it took the server's ages to update. But what made it interesting as well, it was like OpenSSL, small, only about 15 developers or whatever it was, not that many developers apparently, but yet such an important project, suddenly it turns out, for encryption on the internet of many, when you're doing transactions, bank transactions and things. And then Apple and Microsoft and Google and so on found out as well. And I believe what happened was they were like, sort of said, oh dear, we're using this, or some of us, oh, we need to sort this out, we need to work on this together, let's get together, when these bugs pop up, we will put money into it, we will fix it, we will use our people, we will sort this out quicker in the future. And I just think it's amazing that happened as well, for example.
Yeah, everybody was so locked into it, everybody was using it, but nobody was helping in any way.
And it was maintained by only volunteers, apparently. No paid developers, yeah? No one with a day job working on OpenSSL, which is what makes it quite interesting as well. And then there's an idea that the open source stuff is a hobby or a pastime and not a profession. And it's I got to ask Joe Reese this briefly last night, and I said, okay, he's a professional podcaster, you know, but and so on. But his response was, yeah, he sort of said it as well. It's a bit mixed here. And it's like, is open source just a waste of time and a hobby? Or is it something that matters? And maybe if it's a gaming project, okay, it's a hobby, it's whatever, but when it comes to something like OpenSSL or even the Linux kernel, I mean, there are paid developers of that now, I believe, but some of those, you know, certain projects, even if you're not getting paid, surely it's something worth doing and being involved with, even if depending on the project a little bit as well. It's not just done for fun, is it? And people who work on Linux distributions as well, so okay, we don't need as many Linux distributions, there's fragmentation. That's what people have said years ago. But those are real projects, and they need quality assurance testing and all that as well. And you can debate probably which projects are a waste of time and shouldn't really exist in general with open source, and which ones should exist, and which ones are more important than others. But surely it's more than just a hobby. And sometimes if people are doing things that are a hobby, or they're doing it in a pastime out of fun, or because they think it's a good thing to do, and they're not getting paid, but sometimes actually that's probably better than a paid job, even, because a paid job is just to make money really and do things, but certain things should probably pay really that don't pay, like when it comes to open source. Plenty of examples. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Because I'm supposed to be doing a speech later on about... No, I do public speaking, I do Toastmasters, it's called. There's clubs all around the world, 144 countries. And my next one's going to be about rock and metal music. It says I'm supposed to be doing some nonsense with body language or something as part of the project as well. But then the next one, it says something like, talk about the difference between between professional... And a personal communication style, or don't talk about the project. And I was just thinking, like, well, really, the next speech I want to do after that is the STEM Steam Stream. I've called it STEM, yeah? Science, Tech, Engineering, Mathematics, yeah? Have you heard that term before? STEM, yeah? Science,
STEM, Tech. STEM and Toastmasters, I've heard.
Yeah, you heard Toastmasters as well, right. Yeah, so STEM, Science, Tech, Engineering, Mathematics. And I read that you can... No, my friend said to me, fix the computer, you can debatably put art into it now. Stream, Science, Tech, STEAM is the next one. Science, Tech, Engineering, Art, Mathematics, Artistic Expression, Presentations, not being born, I don't know quite. And then it's on the internet, you can even call it Stream if you want now, and add reading and writing in that. Which is like, really? So I'm going to call speech the STEM, STEAM, Stream people, basically. But it says I'm supposed to be talking about communication style, hobbyist and personal. Now, which caught me a bit at first, because I was thinking, like, am I a professional? And I was like, no, because I've got OCD and disability stuff a bit. I'm not actually working currently. I'll just say that, right. I may have worked before, but whatever, right. Or may have not worked at all, but that's not really the point I'm getting at quite. But when I first read the description, I thought, oh, geez, they want me to talk about being a professional and how I communicate and how I talk otherwise. And it got me a bit. But I think that's just part of it. But there is a difference on how you talk anyway. If you talk on here, I mean, Netminer said it earlier, how he's learned to adapt. How he will talk in different situations. He said he has some, yeah, and things like that. You talk differently. If we're talking to tech people, be it in a conference or be it on here, a podcast, whatever, we talk like the way we do. If you're talking to your doctor or something, you're going to talk in a different way. And if you talk to your girlfriend in Thailand, you're going to be speaking in a different way again, I expect. But what I want to give them is a speech about STEM and some of the open source stuff, I guess, and how that people have extreme passion and interest, but it doesn't. But it's a good thing. They know what they're talking about. Like something don't matter. Yes, you're not being paid, but what you're doing is amazing anyway. A bit like the UB Pork project, which I mentioned. That's all volunteer based now, and it's amazing what they're doing. And you said you heard of Toastmasters before as well, is that right?
Yeah, I've worked with several people that are members.
You have? That's interesting. I think Toastmasters, the problem with Toastmasters as well is that, in some ways, is that they there's two, there's a kind of, well, most people, I'm the exception in some ways, really. I mean, it's aimed at kind of like businessy type people, where they're going to present in their business. Or they're going to present in their university, maybe, or well, not just that, not only that. It's supposed to sort of cater for everyone, really. But I think sometimes they cater too much on the kind of business side. I'm the exception. Most of my life, I've not worked actually. Maybe all of my life, because of disability, yeah, OCD. Obsessive compulsive of sort, that's the thing that causes most problems in my life, especially with timekeeping, yeah? Because the world's very much about being somewhere on time, yeah? And if you're late, it causes problems usually, or for lots of things it does, or if you're constantly late. It's not just that, there's the other stuff with OCD, intrusive thought stuff a bit. It's not just, people think it's hand washing. I mean, yeah, it's hand washing, but it's not just checking and hand washing, it's quite a complicated thing. And then link that with, I'm going to say mild Asperger's or autism, because apparently I've got that as well, a bit. Old diagnosis, age 14, you see, it all comes a bit complicated. I'm thinking I'm the exception of Toastmasters in a way, but even, I'm also a vice president membership at the moment. I'm supposed to be trying to get people into my club, new members, but... that's on the committee. I've got one of the roles, but it's a good way to sort of practice speaking, public speak, learn to do it, get your feedback. Even Richard Stallman learned in Toastmasters, I read originally, and he started going all the way around the world doing his speeches about why you should only use free software. And then I've got to do something about mentoring, and I was thinking I'll talk about when I was going to work at this place, and it didn't happen, and whatever, and no one's really mentored me, but I've taught people things online as well, etc. But I think the STEAM thing is interesting, and what I'm thinking as well is there a link between STEAM, well, it's not just STEAM, but it does seem that a lot of the inventors and scientists and programmers and all this have got at least some ASPE traits. They got either got autism, Asperger's diagnosed, or they have just a few of the traits and it's not diagnosed, but it does seem that there is a link between. And maybe the stream passion thing as well is also linked to Asperger's, because most people don't have that. They're not really extremely passionate about anything like that, I don't think. But we're all a bit different, because we're the STEM people, see? We're not average Joe and Jane, are we? We're the STEM people. Huh? Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? Before you saying something, someone was saying something. What happened there?
Oh, I said I do and agree.
Did you see what I'm saying? Yeah. And also, people think Asperger's and autism is a bad thing, and it's like, well, there's a whole spectrum. And yes, there are people with learning difficulties and things as well, and they look a bit different and stuff at times. But everyone's different. But they do say that Asperger's is usually the more clever people, the more higher up clever people. And someone said, like, if you do a science degree in, say, high-end physics, or something like that, PhD in, say, physics, you're going to probably meet a few Asperger's people, definitely. we've got really complicated science, yeah?
Yeah.
And tech is more logical, I guess. Tech is generally, you've got one way and that's it for a lot of stuff. It doesn't work. Or there's a bug if it's a program, or, you know, yeah, it's quite straightforward when you understand certain things, I guess. Same with, like, partitioning a Linux distro. You have to partition it in a certain way or it won't work.
Yep, that's true.
But I think there's flack around stuff like that as well. That's why I was going to, like, be a bit older now. I want to kind of, I don't know, we all die eventually, I guess. It sounds, sounds a bit sad saying that, but it's true, isn't it? And it would be probably good to try and do something. But I'm still reasonably young, to be fair. But, you know, things can happen. I guess we've got to... Well, you know, do something, isn't it? Otherwise, life's a bit like, what have I really achieved in my life? Oh, or not achieved. Do you know what I mean?
I do. That's one of the reasons why I'm in Thailand. I just went through a year and a half of cancer.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I had stage 3 colon cancer.
Wow, really? Are you over that now?
I hope so.
Yeah, no, I hope so too. Well, why Thailand? Because you thought, well, I'm going to get love now then.
we'd been talking before I was diagnosed, and she'd invited me to come over and visit. And we had plans to go to Cambodia to see Angkor Wat, the ancient Buddhist temple civilization that was lost. They rediscovered it in the 1990s, I think, late 80s, early 90s. But she kept getting upset that I hadn't committed to coming, and it was because I was having issues with my health that I wasn't telling her about. And then I got diagnosed with cancer, stage 3 colorectal cancer.
Well, yeah, that's basically it, isn't it? It's like, well, yeah, we don't know when we're going to die exactly either, or it could just be health going down so badly, or something happened, and then you can't go and do whatever suddenly. So, and I think a lot of people think, oh, we'll live for ages, especially if you're young. But on the other hand, I mean, people can get shot. They can be in the wrong place and get shot, and you know, things can happen. Yeah.
I've been close to situations that are just random and crazy.
I think my health is mostly okay, but it's not perfect either. I know that full well. I know that, you know, nothing major probably, but it makes you think a bit. Like, yeah, I'm getting older as well, and I mean, I hope I'm not dead in 10 years' time, or in really bad health or something. But you know, you don't really know what's going to happen, do you?
No, you don't. And my treatments and stuff were really aggressive, and I think everybody was really surprised in the medical in oncology that I did so well. One, they were surprised that my treatments were so aggressive, and two, they were surprised that I was doing so well. But I was like, yeah, this isn't what's going to do me in. It'll be something else.
I know a guy from my group, or whatever, who had cancer, but he's, I think, something similar or whatever, but he's over it now, it seems. That was like years ago.
Yeah, I just got the, my last surgery was in September, I think, August, September. And I just got the go ahead the beginning of December to get travel vaccines and to travel. So as soon as that happened, I scheduled an appointment for my vaccines, got my vaccines, scheduled my airline tickets, and left.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
It was kind of crazy because I'm not comfortable traveling or going to new places and stuff. It's a big deal for me. I went to Linux conferences for years before I made any connections with people because I don't know, just too shy, too introverted. And Klaatu was actually the first one that I was talking to. I think at the Southeast Linux Fest, I'd met him at one or two conferences every year for like 3 years. And he didn't remember who I was.
Yeah, Klaatu's not on beyond this time, it seems.
Yeah, but we were talking about SQLite because Richard Hipp, who created SQLite, was at the Southeast Linux Fest, and we were talking back and forth, and I got to the point where I was talking past his knowledge level. I think he was like, wait, what's your name again?
Some people have bad facial recognition as well. I don't know if it's linked to autism, Asperger's, or it could be, or whatever, because I know I have it at times as well, and there was a guy who came to my lug years ago. I talked to him, it once, maybe twice, and he remembered me. And I didn't think much of it years ago. But then I went to conferences, and he'd seen me at the thing in England, and he'd seen me at, I think, in Brussels at least once or something or whatever happened, and then also back in my city when the other thing was on, and then he was like, oh, hello to me, and I was like, what? And at first I was like, who's that guy? Well, I don't recognize him at all. And then he kind of told me who he was, and he reminded me, and I was like, oh, I met you years ago, didn't I? also, once, I remember I followed the wrong people back from Liverpool, because I was going to go to a hotel, and I said, can I go back with you? I wasn't bang on sure where I was, I wasn't that far away, but I wasn't sure, and I followed the wrong people, caught the wrong people, and I'm not sure if they were from that conference, actually. They're like, oh, you can get a taxi from here, or something. I'm like, oh, I wasn't very far away, But generally people remember me as well, be that in person or possibly online sometimes as well. They remember me, yeah. but I don't always remember them, that's for sure. And facial recognition. Okay, if I've seen somebody, I mean, I was out having a walk, 2018 around here, sort of. There's a nice walk, a bit of a car journey away, let's say, but I was walking around there with someone, and some woman said hello to me. I was like, suddenly, and it was like, what? She was like, hey, you were in the competition in Toastmasters, weren't you, for like table topics at school or something. I was like, yeah, years ago in the other club, sure. And it's like, and I don't know how she remembered me, but she remembers me seeing me in the competition, I guess, when she came along. So she's only really been there once, but even then, for some reason. But yeah, facial recognition and stuff. Maybe voices to an extent as well, but that's a bit different. So you know, it's very much about faces, really, isn't it? That's how we recognise people, generally speaking. You see somebody again, oh yeah, I've seen you before. But we can't remember every single person we've met either. And what was a bit weird as well is I was going down to the one in my city down here the other year, because only on twice to free node event, but I was at the bus running a bit late at my local bus stop just out there, and some guy suddenly started talking to me like, hello, it's Bastion. I was like, well, what? And he's like, oh yeah, I've been at the other conference. And I said to him, like, why don't you go to this conference then? But I really wasn't expecting to meet someone out there that had been at my one of the other conferences I've been at, not out there.
No, you know, you really have a problem when you look in the mirror and says, hey, who is this guy in my mirror?
I'm glad Verbal has appeared now, and that's the first thing he says as well. Yes, that happened to you, didn't it, Verbal?
Oh, yeah.
Who's this old guy in the mirror? Oh, geez, he's got even more grey hair now, I think, from last time. And a grey beard. That's what happened to you. Is the other guy still there?
Pardon?
Me or Pardon? Someone else?
Yeah, you. Yeah, did you hear what I was talking about? Facial recognition stuff, yeah?
Yeah. I read an article one time about disconnecting with people when too many people are in the same area, like cities and stuff, that below a certain number of people, there's more peace and harmony and stuff. And it's supposed to be related to tribalism and how we can only recognize and keep associated in our minds around 200
people. Yeah, there's that as well. That's kind of a different point, but yeah, I find this as well, that I live in a place that is, generally speaking, quite busy in the day, lots of cars going through, it's because the actual city is right there as well, but lots of cars going through, there's a college, not the same in Britain as the USA, but yeah, big college, it's an educational place down the road, there's a university down the other side campus, there's lots of shops, there's lots and lots of people around, but obviously when you go out there, the other thing is people don't say hello, or rarely say hello, you just basically walk past people for the most part, and it's a bit sad in a way, really. If you see somebody, you just generally walk past, no one says hello. It's not like The Simpsons, for example, the cartoon, where everybody knew everybody.
Well, so part to that conversation, where I live in Kentucky, everybody says hi. It doesn't matter if you've never met this person in your life. You're like, hey, how's it going? And that's literally, that's all you ever say. But, yeah, I've lived in places like upstate New York. Nobody ever said a word, and I'm the weirdo going down the street. Hey, how you doing? Waving at people, and they're just looking at me like, I swear I don't know you. Get away from me.
Yeah, sad, isn't it? It's like that. And then what I've heard as well is when people found, I think it was somebody found someone online, or they moved somewhere else, and then some other person moved as well, and then somebody found each other online, and it was like, hey, we used to live in the same place basically before, but we didn't even know each other, so we meet here instead. And it's like, what?
Yeah, I'll have customers come in. I work at a local cell phone deal, and I'll have people come in. You're that guy that said hi to me in Kroger one time. I'm like, probably about 30 times, yeah, but I don't remember. Honestly, earlier you guys were saying 200 people is what most people keep in their minds. I'm like, I'm lucky if it's 20. I don't remember anybody. And I tell my customers, I'm like, it's nothing against, it's not that I don't want to remember you. It's just, I usually deal with on average 40 people a day.
Yeah.
I don't understand how teachers do it other than they have the person, they have the kids every single day.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But, yeah.
Well, that gives you a list of names in front of them to help out.
Yeah, that helps too. I don't get that luxury. I have to sit there and go, what's your name again? And I tell them, I'm like, I'm wearing a name badge. You're not. I promise you it could be a year from now unless you come in once a week, which I do have a couple of customers who I'm like, hey, Bill, how's it going? How are the kids? There's a few people that have come in so often that I remember them, but it's very rare.
Where do you work?
And there's a few that I don't even have to ask them their phone number. I just punch it in while they're pulling into the parking lot.
Where do you work?
I work for T-Mobile.
Oh, okay.
I think you're right, Dave. I think what happens as well is that to be remembered, you have to also do something that makes you stand out. Something weird, maybe, or maybe not, well, not always weird, but something that kind of makes you stand out in their mind, and they think, oh yeah, I remember that person. Oh yeah, I remember that.
Oh but yeah, that's the one that's batshit crazy and believes in every single, thing so under the, any conspiracy. Hello. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you going around saying hello in a place where no one says hello is probably enough to do it, because they're thinking,
I'm that batshit crazy guy. Yeah, exactly.
Like this one guy who kept on saying hello, didn't he?
Dave Brocky will be remembered forever.
But it's sad that it's like that as well. And
it's also funny because I can be like, so have you heard anything, interesting? Like, I use them to find out what the newest conspiracies are. Like, Biden has been dead for 3 years. JFK Jr. is still alive and running the country. I can't remember. There's so many of them that I'm just like, oh, okay, cool.
What I found as well is this, right? When you're out and about in these kind of places, now, like I was saying, people don't say hello. People generally ignore you, but there are exceptions to this. So, for example, I went up to my... It's only up the road here. We've got something called Greg's in Britain. Go try it out if you ever come over here. It's basically a bakery-type chain. It's all over most of the country. And you can have your little sausage rolls, your veggie, vegan stuff and that. And you can get that. You're very quick. Go in there, get something, come out with it. But I have a Papa John's next door. It's closed currently. We've got Papa John's over there, I believe, as well. And there's a Domino's further down. But I remember on one particular afternoon, it was reasonably nice weather. I walked down. It's not only about 15 minutes walk. It's not that far. And I thought, right, I'm going to buy the Greggs. And I'm going to eat it outside the Greggs, by the Greggs, like I tend to do. But I was not in a rush to go home or anything. And it was like coming up to 5 o'clock. The road was quite busy. But the Papa John's was there. And what was interesting is this guy came out of the Papa John's to deliver a pizza somewhere on his bike or his car or whatever. And I was eating my Greggs, been there about half an hour. I started looking at my phone, whatever. I'm still there. And about an hour later, I'm still there, right? So he came back and he looked at me and he was a bit like, why am I still here? You know, why am I still there? Basically, and you're going, are you all right? Are you waiting for a bus or something? And I was like, no, I live nearby. Whatever I said, that was one example, but it just kind of shows if something makes you look a bit weird or unique or a bit like, hang on, you've not left this area, you're still in this general area and you haven't moved on, and it's an hour later. People start to wonder, don't they, when they don't really know what's going on, yeah?
Yeah, Papa John's was actually started by a Kentuckian, so, yep, I know Papa John's very well. He's a jerk, but he still does things for Kentucky, I guess. Yeah.
What was that comment in the chat said? Just tell them something.
You're at my side.
Yeah. And, I did it in the shop once as well. Now that was where it's conference. I hadn't eaten properly, and I was like, should have moved back to the hotel. And again, they kind of wonder then, why are you still outside here? Why have you not left the shop area? the whole way outside in the service station. But yeah, it's kind of sad though. And then again, where are you from? What are you doing? Why are you out there? Why are you out there still? It's like people just don't care unless it looks a bit odd. Then it's the exception, isn't it? Then they're like, okay.
Yeah, you have to say.
Yeah, I don't find that happens around here lately. It's people are kind of getting to that point. It's like, oh, you're there all day. Okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah, you have to say, if people ask, why are you still here? You have to just say, hey, I'm planning my attack. And then they'll really pay attention to you.
So we have this really nice white jacket for you to try on. We may also have a padded room, and it's great. You get to go and jump against the walls. We give you great pills.
You get to hug yourself all day long.
Point me in that direction.
Yeah.
There's been a few days where I'm like, you know what? I'll take that. That's fine. Yeah, let's go. Yeah, the missus is a therapist of sorts, and... from time to time, I'm like, how much does it cost to go to Eastern so I can get a vacation? And she just gives me this look, and I'm like, I'm not kidding. Like, literally, what do I have to do?
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.